The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world and how happy and excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is a dude who is always a home run in my books, Jonathan Strickland.
That's foreshadowing. Ariel, I got a question for you. What fictional location would you most like to visit? This is a tough one. There's so many.
It is.
I mean, this was one that I struggled on because there are a lot of fictional places that hold a special spot in my heart. Although, to be fair, a lot of them, some stuff goes down in some of those fictional locations.
Yeah, it's dorky, but Narnia.
Narnia's cool. Narnia's cool. You got talking animals.
You got talking animals. You've got, you know, a diverse biodome. You've got magic and wonders. It's just...
Now, you do have the greatest evil ever made, Turkish Delight. Sure. Turkish Delight, you know, is the worst.
I love Turkish Delight.
You are... do you eat rose-flavored Turkish Delight?
Yes. Oh. I eat the chocolate flavor, the chocolate-covered rose-flavored Turkish Delight.
So, like...
And lemon Turkish Delight.
So, like, that is, to me, like, that is, like, the... That's, like, anti-candy.
Listen,
it's like eating solid perfume.
I used to have, okay, you know how kids eat Play-Doh? I used to have a Tisket, a Tasket, a flower-making basket, which was a Play-Doh thing, and it had rose-scented Play-Doh, and it reminded me of that, but better tasting. Shut up, I was a little kid.
Yeah, this was 3 years ago, just in case you guys are wondering.
Okay, where would you like to visit?
What fictional, Mr.? Okay, so yeah. There are tons that I think of, and but I think the one that I keep going back to is the Shire from the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. The Shire, because I think hobbits have got the right idea when it comes to general approach to life, which is eat your way through it. I am I'm down with that, and so that's the one that I think I most would like to visit.
You know, Lothlorien was a close second on my list, so...
Yeah, lame bespread. Get that lame bespread.
But your point about the food in the Shire, that is a strong motivator.
Yeah, now, interesting that we both went fantasy locations. Clearly, we could have picked something from a science fiction type of place, but that gives us a little... I think of myself as more of the sword than the laser type, so, you know, that's... fits.
And there's also a lot of, like, if I think, well, do I want to go to Gallifrey from Doctor Who? No, there was a horrible war that happened there. It's not a happy place. Do I want to go to Alderaan? No, I don't. Well, you know,
you can't.
I can't.
The locations in Star Wars are, for the most part, inhospitable. Like, deserts and frozen tundras and salt plains.
Yes. Maybe Perelandria if I want to go sci-fi, but that's still kind of fantasy, so... Mm.
Well, let's get back to reality by talking about some of the top news stories in the geek sphere. And launching us off is something that Ariel and I are so gangbusters for. We got a trailer for the Snyder Cut of the Justice League. And Ariel, what was your reaction to this new trailer?
I think probably the exact opposite of your reaction, which was I started it and I went, oh, I don't like this. I don't like Lex Luthor's talking at the beginning and screaming Superman. And then in the middle, I was like, okay, I kind of like this. Flash is saving a girl from a car. I really liked the Flash in the Justice League. You know, I think that was great casting and the actor did a great job with it. So I kind of got excited in the middle. I mistook, because I read an article saying that Granny Goodness made an appearance in the trailer, and I mistook Darkseid for her because Zack Snyder's Justice League and all of the DC stuff he does is so, so dark that I was like, well, he just made an ugly, dark version of Granny Goodness. But no, it was Darkseid. She was standing to his left. And
Yeah, I couldn't pick out anyone because to me, all the villains look vaguely the same to me. So I was just like, sure, I'll take your word for it that these characters were in that trailer.
She looked like a woman with gray hair. And then at the end of it, I was back to the you know, because I do not like what they did with the Joker's mouth.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't like I don't know. It just visually, it strikes me the wrong way.
I hated it. I don't know. DC hasn't worked for me. No one's surprised by this. Keep in mind that before the Marvel Cinematic Universe, my favorite superhero movie of all time was the Christopher Reeve Superman film, the original Superman movie.
Oh, that's such a good one.
It's a great movie. It's very campy. It's very campy, but it knows it's campy, right? Like, it's not campy by mistake. And I just find it really entertaining. And so I am clearly the wrong audience for the Snyder version of DC Universe. And I acknowledge that. And I'm not saying that they are bad movies. I say I don't find them entertaining. And this trailer just kind of reinforced that for me. Again, I'm not saying it's going to be a bad movie. It's going to be a long movie. I can say that.
Yes. Yes.
You better pack a lunch. But I don't know that it's going to be bad. I just know that I'm still not seeing anything that appeals to me. Now, maybe this is going to be one of those cases where the trailer and the finished product are different enough where I have a very different reaction from the film than I did from the trailer. That could be a discussion thing that we have in the future, is movies where we felt it was very different from the trailer we had seen for that film. But that's a discussion for another time.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I mean, I will probably watch this because I feel like I ought to, and I have HBO Max, but I do wish that it had just been two movies.
Yeah. Like, I hear you. Yeah. I mean,
two movies, granted, or mini series like they were originally talking about.
If you are watching it on HBO Max, though, you could always just pause it and make it two movies. You just have to determine. Maybe it's when they start yelling Martha. Who knows?
Yeah. Listen, I started watching The Stand on CBS All Access last night, and I almost turned the first episode into like four different episodes because I kept pausing it. Not because it was bad or anything, just because
I haven't heard good things about that. But then I don't have CBS All Access, so I've not seen any of it.
It's interesting. I have no attachment to the source material. I never read The Stand, and I'd never watched the original miniseries. So
you're not missing much there.
being two episodes in, it's interesting. I understand that the ending is kind of blah, but we'll get, okay. I'm getting off on a tangent. Let's go back to Zack Snyder.
Yeah. Cause he's in our next story.
Yes. Apparently he is not done with crazy convoluted stories because he's thinking about doing The Legend of King Arthur.
Yeah, he said that he wants to do something that's a more true representation of the Arthurian legend. The problem is, which version of the Arthurian legend are you talking about? Because there are a lot of different ones. I mean, La Morte d'Arthur is the famous one, right? But there are a lot of others that are, you know, no less valid. In fact, there are others from that same time period of Arthurian legend. So it's curious to see what he means by that. I'm not particularly excited by that either. I mean, I think it could be good. It could be, I'm sure it'd be very grim and dark, but then Arthurian legend does get grim and dark. So
yeah,
I'm curious what you think, Ariel.
I think it is a legend that is already existing in his wheelhouse, which is too much story, not enough editing. And I love, you know, Arthurian legend, but it does, like you said, there's lots of versions. It goes all over the place. There's a bunch of bunny trails. And so.
Well, and it's a collection of stories, right? It's not like it's one story. It's a bunch of different stories.
Yeah. And so I feel like making a movie of those bunch of stories is what Zack Snyder always does. I feel like he has a really hard time editing down to one story. So I don't know if it'll be good. I don't have as much distaste for a lot of the King Arthur movies that have come out in the past. Some people do.
Do you have a favorite?
I would say probably the Sam Neill miniseries.
Merlin?
Shut up.
Merlin's not even.
I'm saying shut up a lot.
Okay, well.
No, it's not.
I mean, okay, look. I mean, but Merlin's very entertaining, Martin Short notwithstanding, but.
Yeah, but I also liked, you know, Disney's Sword in the Stone. I like, it's not really a Arthurian legend, but like all the takes on a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. Like
for me, it's Excalibur. Excalibur, I think, is like almost a perfect movie.
Excalibur is also a good movie. So, you know, I will be the first person to say that sometimes I go into a movie not expecting much. So there are a lot of so-so movies that I really enjoy.
Yeah, that's some foreshadowing there too.
Yes, but you know, this Arthurian legend is one where I tend to enjoy most of it. So,
well, we've got a couple of stories that I am curious about that we can kind of pair together, which is that we know a little bit about the casting of two different projects that are adaptations of video games, that being Borderlands, where we know that Jack Black has joined the cast to voice the character of Claptrap, a robot in the Borderlands video game series. Mm-hmm. And we also know that The Last of Us television series is going to have Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey as the two leads of that story. Now, Ariel, have you played either or watched either Borderlands or Last of Us?
I have not played or watched Last of Us other than the trailers. I have played some Borderlands and I've watched a lot of Borderlands. I don't do as great with strictly first-person shooters because I get motion sick. Mm-hmm. But I've watched a lot of the story and I enjoy it. And I get casting, you know, Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal have done, Game of Thrones is pretty dark. So yeah. I think they're great casting for Last of Us. However, as great as I think Jack Black will be as Claptrap, I'm like, it's an animated character. Just use the voice of that character.
Yeah. Last I heard, he was working for Rooster Teeth. I don't know if he still is, but I remember hearing him on the Rooster Teeth podcast, and he actually talked about how he was the voice of Claptrap. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I honestly don't know what to think about the Borderlands one, because I don't really think of those games as having much of a story. I mean, there's a general kind of story to it, but there's not any meat on the bone there. It's essentially, there's this big secret cache of powerful items and you're looking for it. And there are other people who are bad guys who are also looking for it. So you need to look for it harder. I don't think that supports a really great movie. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. Last of Us is more of a narrative, a traditional narrative. The game plays out like a mini series. It feels like you're playing through something like The Walking Dead, and it has one heck of an ending. And we know that the television series is going to closely follow the events of the first game. It might also incorporate some elements that were found in the second game, and it's going to expand on the world of Last of Us. So you're going to get more than what was in the video game, which is also good because, again, video games have to make way for gameplay, right? And whenever they're making way for gameplay, you're not really making much of a story. You're playing through stuff. So obviously the television series has to make some adjustments there, or else if you boil down the actual story to what it is, it would last like two episodes.
Yeah. We also did get casting news for the Dungeons and Dragons movie that we've been anticipating. Chris Pine, Michelle Rodriguez were recently announced, as well as Justice Smith.
Now we have Roger Jean Page. He's a actor from Bridgerton, and he's joined the D&D group. We don't know what class he's playing. I'm hoping for rogue.
I was going to say, I think he would be a rogue. That's what he plays in Bridgerton.
Yeah. So I was I don't want to typecast, but yeah, this is one of those announcements that I thought was really interesting. I mean, he's clearly very much in the zeitgeist because Bridgerton has become one of those series that a lot of people were watching and talking about all the sexy times in that show. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping there won't be as much sexy times in D&D because that stuff can go wrong. Y'all, you miss a saving throw. Next thing you know, you're marrying a manticore. It's rough.
Well, I don't know because it, It just hit me. Marrying a Manticore. That would be a great sitcom.
I think that's the prequel to Hello from the Magic Tavern, but go ahead.
Yes. It's got Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daly working on it. They worked on Spider-Man Homecoming and Horrible Bosses. So, like, the Spider-Man Homecoming side excites me. The Horrible Bosses side makes me worried for Marrying a Manticore, but we'll see.
I mean, if this becomes a film adaptation of Hello from the Magic Tavern, I'm okay with it. It would not really be a D&D series at that point, but we know you could do worse, because there have been other D&D adaptations and they were terrible.
Yeah.
But you know what, Ariel, I think we should probably have a little conversation about movies where we had expectations and the result of seeing that movie subverted those expectations in one way or another. Does that sound good to you?
It does, but first, I need to take a quick break.
Ariel's finished breaking things, so we're ready to have this conversation. Yes. Now, I think we should start with movies that we hoped we would like, but it turned out we didn't really like them that much. And then we can end it talking about movies where we had low expectations, but then we really ended up enjoying it. That way we end on a positive note.
Sure. So I'm going to start, because I feel like people have heard me go on this diatribe before. I have two movies that I expected to like and really didn't. And the first one was not as bad as the second one. So the first one is Elf. And I thought I would like it because everybody built it up so much. And then when I watched it, I was very nonplussed. But the movie that I was excited to go see, and that when I went to watch it, it hit me in all the wrong ways, is Sucker Punch. It should be not a surprise at all to you.
This is one of those movies that did have, like, the really stylistic trailer that made it look incredible, with elements of, like, fantasy and maybe some steampunk in there, and it just had it was like a music video style movie trailer that made that movie just look like it was just oozing cool.
Yeah, and the storyline is, there is this girl who gets sent to an insane asylum, and to deal with it, she imagines that she's in a brothel, and to deal with the fact that she's in a brothel, she imagines that she is fighting Nazis or orcs or giant robots or whatnot. Surprise, surprise, it's by Zack Snyder. And my biggest problem with the movie is that there were one too many levels.
It was like Inception, but not handled well.
Yeah. It was like, any of those two levels paired together would have been a good story, but you add that third level to it and it's just too much and it's too disjointed, and I stopped caring.
Yeah,
so much potential.
So full disclosure, I have never seen Sucker Punch. I wanted to when I saw the trailer, but by the time I would have been able to go see the movie, word had gotten out about it. Ariel even told me about it. I remember back in the day you were messaging me about it. And the more I heard about it, the more I thought, maybe I just give this one a miss, because it also sounded to me like, well, it's Snyder. It goes so dark. It deals with some very, very dark material. And everything I heard told me that it did not reconcile or resolve any of that in a very satisfying way.
No, it's got a very bleak ending. And nothing against movies with bleak endings, but if you wanted a bleak ending, I think it should have just been I've been sent to a sanitarium, and I'm dealing with it by pretending I'm desirable in some way. Adding that fantasy level almost made fun of those first two levels. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like if he wanted it to be poignant and serious, I feel like he should have taken out the fantasy level. And if he wanted it to be a little bit more adventurous, he should have taken out one of the two bleak levels.
Yeah, I also find that your escape mechanism involves you imagining yourself in a different, but in many ways equally bad situation, isn't much of an escape mechanism.
No. And then you have to use another one, and then you have to use another one. And, like, none of the escape mechanisms were great. And I guess there is some sort of moral or point to that, but I just did not find it enjoyable. So what is the movie that you thought you would like that you didn't, Jonathan?
So, all right, I've got four that I'm going to talk about, but really only one I'm going to talk about. Three I'm going to mention, rather. So The Hobbit, but everyone's heard me talk about The Hobbit, how I really wanted to like that movie. I had some misgivings simply because I knew they were making three films and I didn't think that the book could support three films. And
you were right.
I was right. I fell asleep twice. I saw the movie twice and I fell asleep in the same two spots twice. So that tells you, like, and that was my favorite book growing up. My favorite book. I have a Lord of the Rings tattoo on my arm. I am a Lord of the Rings fan. But yeah, that totally failed to meet my expectations. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, another one. I highly anticipated that movie. I really love the Indiana Jones trilogy. I think each movie is interesting in a different way. I think Raiders is my favorite of the three, but I like all three for different reasons. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull comes around. I actually like Shia LaBeouf in it, but apart from him, there wasn't much in that I liked. I didn't think Cate Blanchett was an interesting villain. I didn't like the science fiction angle as opposed to the more mystical angles of the other Raiders films. That one fell short for me. Transformers, I was hoping I would like, but I couldn't even make sense of that mess. Now, I didn't have high expectations. It's a movie that's based off a cartoon that itself was a way to sell toys. So didn't have high hopes, but I couldn't even tell what was going on in the transformation scenes. And it gave me a very strong negative opinion of Michael Bay in general. Other elements added to that. Mm-hmm. But the movie, the real one I picked, is Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Because...
Oh, that's a good movie.
Star Trek V?
No.
Kirk versus God?
No, I'm kidding.
So I was a huge Star Trek fan. Growing up, big Star Trek fan, the son of two Star Trek fans. And you got to remember that this movie followed up Star Trek IV, A Voyage Home, which was a very lighthearted, very silly departure for Star Trek. Like it still had adventure in it, but it was, I mean, there was a lot of comedy in Star Trek IV, which is interesting because the other one that everyone really loved from that era was Star Trek II. There wasn't a lot of comedy in that one. There was a lot of drama and a lot of action. Yes. So then Star Trek V comes around. William Shatner directed it. And it's essentially Kirk versus God and Kirk wins. And as big a fan as I was of Star Trek, I was just like, come on. He was Mary Suing himself to the ends of the universe and back. I couldn't stand it. So that was one that was a huge letdown for me.
Star Trek V was pretty weak. I realized that my joke about liking it didn't really fly, but the fact is, I know people used to say every other Star Trek movie was a good one.
Yeah, the even ones are good ones for the original. Like Star Trek II is Wrath of Khan, Star Trek IV is Voyage Home, Star Trek VI is Undiscovered Country, which was, Christopher Plummer, who just recently passed away, was a villainous Klingon who quoted Shakespeare in that movie. And that one was, that one was pretty good. I don't think it's as strong as 2 and 4 are, which are strong for totally different reasons. They're also tonally so different from each other. That's kind of interesting that they're all part of the same series, but they have very different tones.
But especially when we got to the Star Trek Next Generation movies, I just liked them all. It didn't matter if they were good or bad. I still enjoyed them.
Okay. Well, this is where our paths part. But we're not talking.
Nice doing a podcast with you then.
We're not talking about the Next Generation movies. So talk about a movie that you didn't think you were going to enjoy, or at least you had lower expectations, and it turned out that it exceeded them.
So there's a lot of movies where I thought, oh, this is going to be an okay movie, and then it turned out to be a great delight. Central Intelligence, Game Night, Jumanji. There are two movies. One. The first one I'm going to mention, it's not that I didn't have high expectations. It's that I didn't expect to like it. And that was It, the most current version.
Mm-hmm.
Not the second one, but the first one. The second one was okay. But, you know, I'm not a big horror fan. I had watched the miniseries.
With Tim Curry
when I was younger and found it very frightening. And
yeah, Harry Anderson's jokes are terrifying.
Yeah. They really are. And so I was like, this is surely going to be good, but it's just going to be too scary for me. But I quite enjoyed it. But the one, and I'm almost ashamed to say that I enjoyed it, is I had a bunch of people tell me that I should watch Spy, the 2015 Melissa McCarthy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I am like, I'm not a big fan of Bridesmaids. Or a lot of Melissa McCarthy's movies. She is a phenomenal actress who I first learned about in Gilmore Girls. Honestly, that's when she first hit my radar. But she's a phenomenal actress. She's very funny and she does great dramatic work as well. But I find her sense of like disparaging humor just not almost too cruel.
Gotcha.
A little cruel, a little gross, but. And she is certainly disparaging to herself in Spy, but it was remarkably funny with Jason Statham and Peter Serafinowicz as foils.
Serafinowicz is great. Yeah, he was Darth Maul's voice in The Phantom mm-hmm. Menace, and he was also he was in Shaun of the Dead, and he was also in Spaced. Fantastic, really fun actor.
And he was the latest Tick as well. Like he's great. These two gentlemen played such a great foil to her that it was just it. Not that she needed help to shine, but it elevated that self-depreciation and gave her a chance to, like, you know, in the movie she becomes quite capable. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent.
It certainly goes a little blue for my taste at some points, but it was I would watch it again. It was quite enjoyable.
Nice.
What about you?
Well, for me, we have to go back to 1989 when I was a teenager. Yeah. And the movie would be, and I apologize to you, Ariel, for this, The Little Mermaid. I did not pick it because of your name. I did not pick it because of your name. I picked it because I was a teenager at the time. And you have to remember that the Disney animated films that had been released leading up to Little Mermaid were seen as being a big step down from classic Disney. Not that they were terrible movies. I mean, I didn't like Oliver and Company. I don't think I've ever watched it all the way through because I just didn't like it. The Great Mouse Detective is entertaining, but a lot of people don't remember it. The Black Cauldron's not very good. It's not a good representation of Lloyd Alexander's work. The Fox and the Hound was good, but heartbreaking.
Yeah, I don't like animal movies like that.
So there had just not been, like, Disney had not been in that classic fairy tale form for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I, as a teenager, had no interest in seeing this, but my family had bought tickets. They were determined to go, so I went with them. And from the opening sequence where the music starts playing and you see the big animated ship break through the sea mist, I immediately was entranced. And halfway through the movie, I was like so mad at myself for being the poopy head teenager who didn't want to go see the cartoon movie. And by the very end of it, I was thinking, all right, well, I gotta buy the soundtrack because this thing is amazing. It didn't hurt that the music was all written by Ashwin and Menken, who did Little Shop of Horrors. And I was a big fan of that. So, that was the movie where I was determined to be the sulky teenager who hated it all the way through. I was ready to just pout my way through that movie. And it won me over from the opening sequence, and I was on board for the rest of the ride, and I became a huge fan of Disney again. Like, for a while, I had loved the classic Disney movies, but I had never really, I didn't hate the later stuff. I just didn't find it as captivating. And this recaptured my fascination until Pocahontas destroyed it.
Yeah, no, I think that's completely valid. I'll even mostly agree. As much as I say I have a love-hate relationship with The Little Mermaid, when I first watched it, yeah, it's that first moment is captivating. It's pretty baller, and the music is great, and it's a lot of fun. And it wasn't until I really thought about, you know, I always like the story of The Little Mermaid, even though the original tale is the Hans Christian Andersen version's rather bleak.
Yes. It does not have a happy ending.
No, I still liked it until the ending. You know, I liked it until I thought about the story and how the story is it's a bratty girl who just gets her way.
Well, like, it's also, I mean, there's also a lot of, there's a lot of elements to it that in a more modern sensibility fall way short, right? Like it's a girl who gives up her voice so that she can be with a guy that she's seen once. Mm-hmm. Like it's falling into those fairy tale tropes that are unrealistic, but you could also say are potentially harmfully unrealistic. So I can totally get those criticisms, and I think they are valid. It all depends on your threshold of where you can say it's a fairy tale and not meant to be a realistic depiction of relationships and that kind of stuff, and you can step back. Or if you're like, no, this is really messed up.
Well, I mean, but if you, and that's part of the problem I have with the Disney one. If you look at Hans Christian Andersen's version, it's a cautionary tale about bad, like even today could be viewed as a cautionary tale about making bad decisions for, you know, somebody you're lusting after and the repercussions of dealing with that.
I would argue that, that Disney sort of addressed that when they did the other Hans Christian Andersen story with Frozen, because you actually do have the story of a young woman who makes some bad decisions based upon her instantaneous attraction to someone who turns out to not be a good person. And then the rest of the story kind of escalates from there. But that was, you know, that's a long time to go before you address those concerns.
Yeah, I'll agree. I mean, there were some consequences in The Lion King, but it's not the same.
The biggest consequence being that you got Elton John writing the music, so it's real Elton John. Not that that's a bad thing. It's just real Elton John. I love Elton John, but it's real Elton John. Okay, well, that's enough of me saying things that don't really mean anything. When we come back, we are going to mash up one of my favorite things in the whole wide world, the DC universe, specifically Justice League, and a classic feel-good, uplifting story about a bunch of women who step up when all the men are overseas fighting war. But we'll explain more after we come back from this break. Okay, Ariel, so what are the two properties we are mashing up?
So, as you said, DC is the Justice League.
Yeah.
And a League of Their Own, which is...
Yeah, let's give a quick overview of what League of Their Own is for those people who don't know. It's also being adapted into a series, right?
Yes, it's being adapted into a series by... Amazon has picked the series up. It's got a really great cast. They announced it in August 2020, so we don't have it yet, but it is upcoming. It's a story about, you know, baseball during World War II, how the wars is affecting the league. And so a gentleman decides to start a league of women baseball players.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts and ends with them being honored and kind of goes through their journey to becoming a great team and a fan favorite, and then their personal lives and things like that. It's really great. It's got Gina Davis and Rosie O'Donnell and all sorts of really great actresses.
There's Tom Hanks. There's a ton of really, really talented actors in that space. And they're all like, it's all done in flashback form. And so we are now doing Justice League of Their Own mashup. And you know what I'm about to ask you, Ariel?
Yeah.
Do you want to go first or second?
I struggled with mine, so I don't know. If you feel yours is good, maybe I should go first so that we can end on a high note.
I don't know that mine is good, but it's very Jonathan.
Okay. Then I will go first.
Okay.
This is called Major League Field of Their Own Justice. And yes, wow. my story is about as convoluted as that title.
You went hard on the mashups.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. So after the latest attack and uproar from Darkseid, the excitement of baseball had all but lost its luster to the American public, and Major League team owners were worried that it would be the final death stroke to the beloved pastime. Thankfully, one owner, Walter Harvey Steele, owner of the Star City Rockets, had an idea. He had seen the prowess with which some local vigilantes fought crime and heard of more in other places, and thought what a great chance to take a great game and make it super. However, the other team owners were hesitant, thinking that using such adept individuals would take all the fun out of the game, and no one would want to watch them play, but Walter would not be deterred. He called on his good friend and mover and shaker, Amanda Waller, to help recruit the perfect team to change the owners' minds and reinvigorate the sport. Amanda started out across the country recruiting the supers she knew of. Soon her team was created. It consisted of Wonder Woman, Stargirl, Supergirl, Black Canary, Hawk Girl, and Zatanna. Also, Mara was there, but she was regulated to being the Water Girl because she wasn't that great of a player. These ladies had never worked together or played together before, but after a brief and humorous training montage, the new team, the Super Peaches, was ready to play ball. Much to Walter's joy, they proved him right and brought in new crowds, but only briefly. You see, there was this problem. They thoroughly trounced every team they played against. So then Amanda had to go and recruit a second team to play them. She got Batman, Superman, The Flash, Green Lantern, Hawkman, and Aquaman as the water boy just to make it even. And these egotistical guys were harder to get to work together as a team, again, all being kind of solo artists, but eventually they were ready to play the Super Peaches. Their team name? The Racing Boys. Racing Boys. It was a bad try to tie things together. Okay, so these two teams were playing each other, but it was dangerous for the spectators. Tempers ran high, fights broke out, and every game ended with destroyed stadiums and casual injuries in the stands. So Amanda and Walter were demanded to put a stop to these two teams. These teams didn't want to stop, though. So Amanda and Walter found a spot in the middle of nowhere, a One Kent farm, and got the Kents to agree to let them build a special stadium in the Kents' biggest field. They called the stadium the Hall of Dreams Stadium. Once the stadium was built, the super teams instinctually came. What the teams and the Kent farms didn't know was that it was actually a space station, so as soon as the supes were inside, it blasted off into space. The supers were told via intercom that they had to stay in the space station until they learned to play together nicely, and that they were banned from ever playing baseball on Earth again. The teams decided that they would just play each other in outer space because they didn't like being told what to do. They would be the only two teams in the league, and that was just theirs, and they called it the Just Us League. Yes, I know that's an old played-out joke, but stay with me. They renamed the Hall of Dreams to the Hall of Justice, and every now and then some villain team like the Legion of Doom or the Darkseid Elites or the Apoca Hitters would try to join in on their baseball games, but they were always defeated. So those villain teams turned to crime, and the Justice League turned to the Justice League to stop them, which was okay because by that time they were really tired of baseball. The end.
Yeah, I was amazed that we didn't get the rookie in there, but everything else, like, so many baseball movie references. All right. You will see that I very quickly decided to abandon making a more overt reference to League of Their Own, although there is some spirit of it in mine. Mine is just Justice League of Their Own, and here it goes. Bruce Wayne, head of Wayne Enterprises of Gotham City, has a big problem. Well, really, he has a bunch of problems. One is that his parents were murdered in Crime Alley when he was a kid, and that kind of thing, man, that just messes you up. But Bruce was able to stay on the straight and narrow, and he inherited his father's enormous business where they were making sporting equipment. While Wayne was expected to embrace golf, or maybe tennis, he learned early on that baseball was his true love. In fact, when he was little, you could say that Bruce was quite the bat boy. But now, he's a Batman. But Bruce has a new problem, An upstart businessman named Lex Luthor has opened up his own baseball bat company in Metropolis, just across the way from Gotham. And Luthor is using all sorts of underhanded means to make bats on the cheap, undercutting Wayne's product and doing immeasurable harm through predatory employment practices in the process. Wayne, in an effort to compete against this menace, proposes a contest, a company softball game, Wayne versus Luthor. Winner gets to stay in business, the loser leaves. Luthor, sensing the opportunity to get a monopoly on bats in the Northeast, agrees. And so Bruce rushes around to form a great team, the Gotham Peaches. He finds that Diana Prince, who works in accounting, has a wondrous pitching arm. He also learns that Arthur Curry, the guy who delivers water to all the water coolers in Wayne Enterprises, I mean, he's a real Aquaman, is also an incredible catcher. Billy Batson, who seems pretty immature for an adult, is, as his name suggests, a pretty good batter himself. Victor Stone, who is really into robotics to the point where his coworkers jokingly call him Cyborg, makes an amazing third baseman. Hal Jordan, who keeps the lights on, even in the darkest night, is the perfect outfielder. Twins Zan and Jaina work in the cafeteria, but their ability to work together seamlessly makes them a great shortstop and first base player. Oh, and all these people also happen to be superheroes, I should mention, but they don't like to brag about it. So, in case you missed it, we've got Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Shazam, Cyborg, Green Lantern, and the Wonder Twins. Wayne's team practices hard getting ready for the big game against Luthor Corp. At one point, Wayne pushes the team really hard. At that moment, Batson bursts into tears, but as we know, there's no crying in superhero baseball. The team gradually becomes really close-knit, learning more about one another in a charming series of vignettes. However, a rivalry develops between siblings Jaina and Zan feeling he is, like, way outclassed by everybody else, defects to Luthor's team. The day for the big game comes, and Luthor has his own squad of heavy hitters, the Metropolis Bells. Solomon Grundy, Gorilla Grodd, Sinestro, the Joker, Zan. Each one a formidable opponent, except Zan. Because seriously, when your superpower is turning into different kinds of water, you're just really lame. Oh, and there's also Luthor's ace in the hole, a mild-mannered Clark Kent, who was working on a big story about Luthor and agreed to join the team as part of his investigation. We get to the game, with both teams playing really hard. Luthor's team isn't afraid to get dirty either, cheating at times when possible. But despite this, the two teams stay fairly even in their scores, and Wayne is biting his nails on this one. It comes down to the final inning, with Wayne's team given a boost when Wonder Woman knocks a ball deep into right field, bringing home a couple of runs, tying up the game. It leaves Shazam on third base. He'd be the winning run. Up to bat is Swamp Thing, who I don't think I mentioned earlier because I couldn't think of a valid reason for him to be there, but he's there, and he's facing off against their pitcher, Clark Kent. Clark pitches two strikes before Swamp Thing can even get his bearings, but on the third pitch, Swamp Thing accidentally makes a wild swing that happens to connect, driving a grounder to shortstop. Shazam is racing to home plate when Gorilla Grodd fires that ball and throws it at the catcher, who is Lex Luthor himself. Luthor catches the ball, but Shazam hits home plate so hard it knocks the ball from Luthor's glove. It also knocks Luthor's hand from Luthor's arm, and Luthor in general turns into a kind of red mist. Wayne's team celebrates as Billy Batson is quietly arrested for involuntary manslaughter. There's no crying in prison, except there totally is. Wayne can keep making bats. Luthor is not only out of the industry, but is, like, totally dead. And all it took was losing Billy Batson. But come on, that guy was a joke anyway. The end.
One, that was brilliant. Two, you almost made me like baseball.
I mean, it would be more exciting if there were superpowers, right?
Yeah.
I love watching baseball, but, like, I admit there's a lot of downtime with baseball.
I'm more of a hockey girl for that reason. It's a lot more, like, constant.
I mean, I would be a fan of hockey if Atlanta still had a team.
Oh, man. The reason for Atlanta's team was to get other teams in. But I digress.
That's for a different podcast.
Yes, or at least a different day. So we're going to wrap up. But, you know, as always, if our mashups inspired you to write your own, or if you have suggestions for mashups, ideas or thoughts on things that we talked about that you'd like to share or suggestions for future shows, please write us and let us know.
Yes, you can send us an email. The email address is lnc@iheartmedia.com. You can drop us a note on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. On Twitter, we are lnc_podcast. At Instagram and Facebook, we are Large Nerdron Collider. You can also go to our website, largenerdroncollider.com. That's where we put every episode plus show notes. So if you want to look at the articles that we use as part of our stories, you can go there. And if you enjoy this show, make sure you tell friends, you know, leave a review, you know, make sure you're subscribed to it, that kind of thing. All those things help us out a lot. We greatly appreciate it. Am I forgetting anything?
Thank you to everybody who's written to us and talked to us and shared your thoughts on social media. We've really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yes, we look forward to lots more conversations. And until that time, I have been Jonathan Strickland.
And I have been standing on second base forever. Jeez.
The game ended like 2 days ago. I'm sorry. Someone was supposed to tell you.
Dang it.
The Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten. Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.